Hello, Drew here. We are running a short listener survey to learn what you, dear listener, think of Off the Books. Visit workiva.com/podcast survey to get started. That's workiva.com/podcast survey, all one word. It takes like 5 minutes and it would help us in the show out immeasurably. Plus, you get entered to win a real neat prize. That's pretty rad. Okay, on with the show. Hello, what is up, and welcome to Off the Books, where we're surfing the uncharted waters of accounting, of finance, and wherever else those waves take us. Off the Books is brought to you by Workiva, the number one platform for financial reporting, risk, and compliance. If someone says socks, and you think Sarbanes-Oxley before baseball in Chicago or feet, Workiva might be right for you. I'm Drew Dubner, and I'm your host. I'm not an accountant, but I like asking questions of people who are, so finance professionals can do their jobs better. Today, we got a doozy of a show. We are joined by the Honorable Rob Sand and the decidedly less honorable Steve Soder. Steve, would you tell the fine folks at home who you are?
Certainly, Drew. Happy to be here. My name is Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. Very much looking forward to debiting some justice today as we get into our conversation with Mr. Sand.
Boy, howdy. And Mr. Sand.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Drew. Nice to meet you and Steve here.
Absolutely. So today we're getting a little outside the realm of the exclusively corporate and financial. Today we're talking to Rob Sand. He is the Iowa State Auditor, to learn a little bit more about what he does and some of the inner workings of auditors and controllers in government. Plus, we're going to find out some more about the projects that Rob and his team have been working on. So, Rob, straight from the get-go, what's your day-to-day like? Basically, spell out your job description, if you...
That is a great question, Drew. It is literally the most common question that I got on the campaign trail. And I think that's because most folks, you know, the office is generally a fairly quiet office. And so I actually do on Facebook what I call Transparency Tuesdays, every Tuesday at 4:45, where I tell people what I did that week. Obviously, a big piece of it is phone calls, emails, you know, the same stuff that all of us sort of feel like we need to sort of bat back into somebody else's field, just get them out of the way so we could focus on the bigger chunks and the deeper thinking stuff. A lot of it's management. We have about 100 employees in the office, great folks. The vast majority of them are accountants or CPAs. A couple of folks in the office with a law enforcement background. And then, of course, we've got a lot of wonderful administrative staff as well. A lot of public availability. I am active on social media. If you are on Twitter, you can find me at RobSandIA. It's me tweeting. And I'm a believer in accessibility. I think that that matters. I think that if we had more public officials that were accessible to human beings and would actually meet up with someone for a meal, when someone on Twitter suggests that, maybe we would see more trust in government. Trust is good. Of course, I'm in the auditing business, and prior to that, I was in the prosecuting business, so I still go by trust but verify, but it's good to have a good start on it by at least knowing that the people involved are real people. So there's a lot of public availability, which could take the form of social media, could take the form of an interview with the media. There's a lot of management work. There's reviewing reports. All the reports that go out of the office, I review. I do not go through every single page of every single report because it's already been read by two people and I can't stand duplication of efforts. And frankly, I trust my employees. They're professionals, they're good people, and they're doing a good job. And then there's actual auditing and investigative work. I enjoyed that when I was at the Attorney General's office. I still enjoy it now. And so there are projects that I actually will get involved with, whether it's because a member of the public brought it to me, or it's because it's an issue that we just know from the get-go is going to be one that people are going to be talking about. And so I just want to make sure that we're doing it in a way where I understand it and I know why we're making the decisions we make, so that when we get to the truth, I'm able to explain to people what exactly that truth is and how we got there.
Rob, I love the introduction, and certainly you've got quite a bit of notoriety and successes that you've had as an Iowa State auditor and previous to that. Can you dig into that just a little bit in terms of what had been omitted from the role when others had served? I'm curious how you would contrast what it looked like before, what it looks like today. You talked about CPAs and law enforcement. It seems like you're mixing things up a little bit.
I had worked a lot with the state auditor's office before I decided to run. And it was because of that work that got me interested in the job. I really enjoyed the people that I work with, good people who are passionate. And yet in Iowa, the way the law is written, having a state auditor's office with only CPAs and accountants, I like to say, is like having a football team with 11 quarterbacks on offense all at the same time. You could have 11 Hall of Famers. You will lose every single game. Doesn't matter. Quarterback should not be playing offensive line. So that was one issue that I wanted to change and that we have changed. We've created a new position called auditor investigator, and we've brought in people with a great deal, decades of law enforcement experience, both at state and federal levels. Another piece of it was efficiency. And this is the big piece, actually, that really made me think, wow, I want to do this. I want to run for office, and I'm really excited about this. The state auditor's office in Iowa has always had the authority in every audit to make recommendations for greater efficiency. And does the office do that on occasion? Yes. But we had not been doing it as a part of every single audit. Now, I am a little particular about efficiency. I'm a little particular about waste. And when I realized the office's existing power on that issue and the fact that they just really hadn't historically utilized it, I got super excited. I was at a point at the AG's office doing criminal prosecution where I had, to be frank, kind of taken a little bit of a dark turn. I mean, the only thing you do when you're a prosecutor is you're spending time thinking about the worst things that people can do to each other. It's important to have accountability and it's important to have that work done. But I have a piece of me that's just an optimist. There's a piece of me that wants to do good work, that makes things better instead of just making bad things less bad. And so when I saw that the auditor's office had the ability to do this work on efficiency and just wasn't doing it as much as they could, boom, there you go. I know people over there. I'm familiar with some of the work that they do. I am not an accountant. That is not what I studied. I do not have a CPA, but I know public corruption. I do public corruption work. Prosecutions. I'm familiar with that piece of the office. And here's this whole other thing that they could be doing that they are just not doing very much. What an opportunity to try to move into a new job where I don't have to get anyone's permission to start doing something differently. We don't have to change the law. We just have to actually utilize the power the office already has that it hasn't been exercising in order to actually do good and save money for taxpayers. That was super exciting to me. It still is.
That's fantastic. Rob, one thing I'm curious about, it seems like every state has an auditor or a controller, whatever you want to call it, depending on the state, and largely they're elected offices. But, you know, if you think of the U.S. as a big corporation, which I agree is a big stretch of an analogy to make here, but how much does your work overlap with Missouri or Minnesota or anything like that?
Good question. State auditors tend to work relatively independently because they're addressing state issues. But that's not always true. There is the National Association of State Auditors. There's also the National Association of State Auditors, Comptrollers, and Treasurers. So there is cooperative work that gets done through those groups. And there's also other cooperative work that gets done independently. Usually what that comes down to is not data sharing or information sharing, but simply designing audits that are going to have the same questions, are going to be looking at the same information. So that then we can sort of use the laboratory of democracy we have in the United States to actually compare and contrast the practices in different states and learn from both the good and the bad. So a good example of that is Delaware, Pennsylvania, and three other states are leading a cooperative effort that Iowa, that our offices join, where we're going to be doing relatively extensive auditing of coronavirus testing information as well as treatment information. So it's something that we're going to be looking into in the sense that we're going to design our audits together, be asking the same questions, trying to look at the same data, and then sort of, again, compare and contrast the responses of different states to see who's doing better, who's doing worse, but also what can we learn that we can use later on in this pandemic and also potentially in future pandemics.
For sure. And the goal with that is to create a more unified effort against coronavirus?
Not necessarily to create a unified effort, but really to sort of to measure. Certainly creating a unified effort would be good, because what we'd be doing is seeing what practices might be more effective. And then hopefully governments are responsive, right? And then they unify around those more effective practices. But the idea really is just sort of to take a snapshot and sort of do studies of each state where we're asking the same questions so that we can then compare results.
That makes perfect sense. And unfortunately, we have to compare some results with this commercial. That wasn't a very good segue, but here's a commercial. Today's episode of Off the Books is brought to you by Workiva. A recent, very highly scientific study conducted by me, when I asked a teenage grocery store clerk about it yesterday, concluded that young people don't know much about accounting or Enron or internal controls or what the SEC is at all. And that is a danged shame, dear listener. You know it. I know it. Accounting and finance and compliance professionals are the gosh darn lifeblood of the mechanism that keep the world on the rails. Even if those TikTok addled teens who staff the cereal aisle can't see it, you are a hero. Accordingly, heroes need the right tools. Batman does not roll in a 1992 Mercury Capri. Ah, this brings us to Workiva, the accounting and compliance platform of the future, custom built for heroes like yourself. Put all of that vital risk and compliance and reporting documentation in one place and spend less time copy and pasting stuff between them. Work anywhere you need to be, whether that's home or your actual office or the grocery store. Automate the useless stuff and get back more time to do the cool things you actually went to college for. Yes, Workiva. It is both magically delicious and kid-tested, mother-approved. Learn more at workiva.com/podcast. That's workiva.com/podcast. And welcome back. Rob, I do want to give you an opportunity to talk through some of your greatest hits here. Let's give the audience some more concrete examples of what you've been working on here. And one of the things that might be relevant to Iowans such as ourselves is the whole thing that went down with Metro Waste Authority last year with Jeff Dworek. Can you get the listeners up to speed with what went on there?
Yeah, Metro Waste Authority is a 2080. That's Iowa nerd slang for intergovernmental cooperative entity. So Metro Waste Authority essentially handles garbage and recycling collection for the Des Moines metro area. Jeff Dworek was at the tippy top of the program and, long story short, made a couple shell companies, wrote those shell companies some checks. Those shell companies wrote some other shell companies some checks that he also had interests in, and so on and so forth, to the tune of close to $2 million. And then he got federally indicted.
That's a lot of long story short there.
Yeah, TLDR. we can do more details, but he was someone that was in a position of trust. It's what you see constantly in cases of theft or fraud. Someone who has an opportunity, who has a motive, and who ends up taking advantage of it. People just weren't looking at what he was doing. He sort of had the keys to the kingdom and really took taxpayers for a ride on that one. So our office, actually one of the first things that we did when I took office in 2019 in January, that was right about when the case was coming in. So we contacted federal authorities and worked with the FBI on putting that case together and getting to the bottom of it.
That sounds like every accountant's dream, really, to have the long arm of the law on speed dial to be able to do stuff about all the stuff you find.
Yeah, it's fun to work with folks who are passionate about their job. And that's one of the things that I enjoyed working with the estate auditor's office when I was at the AG's office. Just good people who, dang it, don't like dishonesty.
That's right.
And don't like theft and don't like fraud and don't like the abuse of taxpayer money. Every time we bring in interns or new employees, I give them a little bit of a piece of the same talk, which is one of the wonderful things I think about working in the public sector is that your paycheck is not just a paycheck. It's mission based. And your mission when you get to work at the state auditor's office is at the end of the day, instilling integrity and instilling trust in the idea of a people that can govern themselves. I mean, we talk about self-governance in this sort of big picture, yeah, right, we don't have a king way, But at the end of the day, a piece of self-governance is also literally individual lover. And so when a guy like Jeff Dvorak can't govern himself, you have the state auditor's office there to do a little bit of a piece of the governing job of him for him. But the people in the office feel passionately about that the way that I do. And that can really be a wonderful thing because you get to get up and go to work every day knowing that you're working towards something bigger than just your paycheck. You're really contributing, hopefully, to a sense of trust and steadiness and reliability out of government, whether it's state government or local government.
That sounds incredibly fulfilling.
It's similar to the work that is done at the AG's office, or at least that I did at the AG's office. I really think that you find a lot of people in the public sector who believe in that mission and who are excited about that mission.
It's incredible.
So the episode and our conversation today would definitely be incomplete if we didn't talk about the Hot Lotto scandal. There was a New York Times magazine and the Daily Podcast both featured it. I was riveted. They were talking Bigfoot hunters and they were talking computer coders and all kinds of crazy stuff. Could you give us, for our listeners who may not be familiar, could you give us just kind of a high level of what happened and what your involvement was?
Yes. The TLDR on this will be a lot longer.
That's okay. It's a great story.
I can offer it in one sentence. It was the largest lottery rigging scheme in American history, and it involved an FBI agent who got fooled but then got revenge. It involved an inside job, and it involved Bigfoot hunters, most importantly.
Right.
Eddie Tipton is a guy who's from Texas, ended up moving up to Iowa, where the Multi-State Lottery Association is headquartered. That also is an intergovernmental cooperative organization. They run lotteries for, I want to say, 38 states and territories in the U.S. and Canada. And he was the head of security. He also, that involved not, it, this isn't the head of security like, you know, stun gun and mall cop, but coder. So he was writing the code that was supposed to be picking random numbers. Which, how much of this do we want to spoil, you guys? I mean, do we really want to?
I mean, really, you should go check out that podcast episode. It's got everything. He bought some hot dogs from Quick Trip. He had the whole thing.
Yes, he did. The whole
he
did. Thing.
He had some hot dogs from Quick Trip, and he went for a lot of long drives. And I mean, the cast of characters is amazing. It's the man who cracked the lottery for anybody who wants to give it a read. Or give it a listen on the daily. Honestly, I'll answer your specific questions about it, but it's too much of a story to try to recap it. Let me put it this way. There were multiple and still are multiple points during the course of that investigation that I now can sort of look back at and be like, that was a career highlight. All in the same case. I was in the AG's office for I 7 complete years, and multiple times in that case, something happened where I thought, wow, I'll never forget this moment.
Well, there's one, so this won't give anything away to our listeners, but there was one point that I wanted to ask you. As I re-listened to the podcast, it was talking about your supervisor at the time was retiring. He was handing off some cases. They sort of dropped this file on your desk, and apparently it was pretty thick. It hadn't really gone anywhere. And there was a videotape and you had watched it with this gentleman going into a Quick Trip, buying the hot dogs, asking for a lottery ticket. And I thought to myself, okay, at that moment, there was something about that case or the way it was described that probably made you think, you know what, I bet there's something here. And maybe this is too far of a stretch, but back to what you were telling us earlier in the conversation about, look, I'm not a fan of waste. I'm not a fan of misuse. I'm not a fan of fraud. I just wonder how much of that drive that you clearly have, which has been so beneficial, was part of that moment where you said, you know what, I think there's something here. We can probably dig into this a little bit more. I mean, maybe I'm just making this up, but I feel like there was really something going on there.
Steve, because that was so complimentary, I want to tell you that it's true, but that would be dishonest.
See, and you don't disappoint. I mean, honesty, right? Just straight up.
Yeah, like, no, I really... My intuition at that point, because the case was a little bit of a joke in the office, it had kind of floated around and wasn't going anywhere. when my boss gave it to me, it was really because I was the newest person in the division, and anyone else he could have given it to, and he knows they would have just basically been like, yeah, no, I'm not. No, thanks. No, thanks. So the work that we did to unravel it was kind of, because there's another piece of this, right? Like I do really, there is that piece of me that really doesn't like waste and really likes efficiency. But there's another piece of me that I really try to just sort of do things the right way. And I don't pretend to be perfect. But I will tell you, like, I sometimes overthink doing that. And one thing that's always easy when you're trying to do things the right way is simply to complete the work, right? That you, if there is something that is your job, and maybe you aren't exactly sure what it is that you're looking at or precisely sure how you should do it, you just do the things that you think you need to do in order to be able to 10 years down the road be like, well, there wasn't anything there. I mean, we did all that we could, and you know, we turned over all the rocks that were in front of us and didn't see anything underneath them. And that was it. It was just doing the job. And then, of course, you know, bit by bit, this entire, I want to say, you know, the stereotype is sweater unraveled, but it was really more of a thneed, if you remember the Lorax. Much larger than a sweater, much more complex than a sweater. And so we, you know, we sort of did those things and then continued to simply do those things. Obviously, we were thinking about them as we were doing them and trying to figure out the best way to do them. But at the end of the day, it really was the question of just getting the work done and following the leads and doing the interviews, even though we thought we knew what people were going to say and that it wouldn't be helpful. Well, you go do it anyways, and sometimes you get surprised.
That's amazing.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And as we continue unraveling the sweater, nearly to the end of the sweater here, you're right. Apologies to the Lorax. As we wrap up, basically, what do you want the public to know about your work, about the work of state auditors as a whole? If you could just sum it up.
Yeah. I think these offices around the country are really important offices and oftentimes underappreciated. I think we take the work of CPAs and accountants oftentimes for granted because, you know, oftentimes it is fairly boring. In fact, the vast majority of the time it is boring, but it's precisely because that boring work is getting done that we have, on whole, a system that is relatively effective for governance. I'm not talking about politics, because that's a whole other topic, but I'm just talking about, generally speaking, the idea that people get up and go to work and do their jobs. Whereas you can look around, all around the world, and see examples of governance that is extremely ineffective. And I think a piece of that here is, you know, we have this level of accountability that it's expected. And so those opportunities are relatively few and far between. At the same time, we have to do it because if we didn't do it, there would be more of them. And you can't catch everyone. And I always say, you know, if you build a better mousetrap, somebody's going to build a better mouse. And so at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of the role of state auditors around the country and inspectors general at the federal level to keep building better mousetraps.
Couldn't be better said. I like that. So that kind of lands us with the closing question of the day. Rob, every episode, we kind of close on a lighthearted note. We have a little fun here at the show. And today's closing question of the day, what cartoon character do you most closely identify with? And I also included or Muppet. If you prefer a Muppet rather than a cartoon character, that's also a fair game.
I have to say, I do have a sweet tooth. So it's hard to not say Cookie Monster.
Entirely fair.
And when I was at the AG's office, at every different division, you know, you'd have the administrative folks and you could walk around the office pretty much every day and trust that you would find someone with cake or cookies or brownies on their desk in their cubicle. And so that's what I did pretty much every day.
Walking around Cookie Monster and up.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. It's delicious. A delicious place to work and rewarding in other ways.
And Steve?
I would actually go back to what you said earlier. You know, there's not an accountant in the world who kind of wants to have the long arm of the law ready accessible. And, you know, most often about the worst we could do is maybe deny somebody's expense report or just some minor inconvenience, something like that. But I think maybe it's Captain America, maybe it's something else. But because the boring work gets done, you know, exactly like you said, these this work is important. And because accountants are out there kind of doing their job, I do think that creates a system where that at least fosters and helps accountability. Doesn't always create it, but it certainly fosters it. And so, again, Drew, that might have been an indirect answer to your question. Maybe Captain America's okay, but Rob, I liked the point. And on behalf of accountants everywhere, thank you.
Amen. Salute. Alrighty, so that wraps things up. I'm Drew Dubner. This has been Off the Books. Please subscribe, leave a review, buy me a Casey's breakfast pizza, or tell your buddies if you like the show. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.
Drew.
Yes?
You didn't answer the question, dude. I almost was going to call you out, and I was like, would that be inappropriate?
Drew always gets a pass.
I always get a pass. I try to give myself a pass. But if I had to answer the question, I think I'd be a Grover. Grover is well-meaning. He's a well-meaning Muppet, but doesn't always know how to materialize that. Or it manifests itself in doing something entirely wrong, which is how I ended up being a podcast host.
That's true. There was literally nothing else left for him. We're like, if this doesn't work out, I don't know what we're going to do with Drew at this point. I'm just joking.